taking care of your brother and taking care of Bran. Is that what you call it? You haven't left this room since Bran was hurt. You didn't even come to the gate when Father and the girls went south. I said my farewells to them here, and watched them ride out from that window. She had begged Ned not to go, not now, not after what had happened. Everything had changed now. Couldn't he see that? It was no use. He had no choice, he had told her. And then he left, choosing. I can't leave him even for a moment, not when any moment could be his last. I have to be with him if... She took her son's limp hand, sliding his fingers through her own. He was so frail and thin, with no strength left in his hand, but she could still feel the warmth of life through his skin. Rob's voice softened. "He's not going to die, Mother. Maester Luwin says the time of greatest danger has passed." "And what if Maester Luwin is wrong? What if Bran needs me, and I'm not here?" "Rickon needs you," Rob said sharply. "He's only three. He doesn't understand what's happening. He thinks everyone has deserted him, so he follows me around all day, clutching my leg and crying. I don't know what to do with him." He paused a moment, chewing on his lower lip, the way he'd done when he was little. "Mother, I need you too. I'm trying, but I can't. I can't do it all by myself." His voice broke with sudden emotion, and Catelyn remembered that he was only 14. She wanted to get up and go to him, but Bran was still holding her hand, and she could not move. Outside the tower, a wolf began to howl. Catelyn trembled, just for a second. "Bran's." Rob opened the window and let the night air into the stuffy tower room. The howling grew louder. It was a cold and lonely sound, full of melancholy and despair. "Don't," she told him. "Bran needs to stay warm." "He needs to hear them sing," Rob said. Somewhere out there in Winterfell, a second wolf began to howl in chorus with the first. Then a third, closer. "Shaggy Dog and Grey Wind," Rob said, as their voices rose and fell together. "You can tell them apart if you listen close." Catelyn was shaking. It was the grief, the cold, the howling of the dire wolves. Night after night, the howling and the cold wind and the grey empty castle, on and on they went, never changing, and her boy lying there, broken. The sweetest of her children, the gentlest. Bran, who loved to laugh and climb and dream of knighthood. All gone now. She would never hear him laugh again. Sobbing, she pulled her hand free of his and covered her ears against those terrible howls. "Make them stop," she cried. "I can't stand it. Make them stop. Make them stop. Kill them all if you must. Just make them stop." She didn't remember falling to the floor, but there she was, and Rob was lifting her, holding her in strong arms. "Don't be afraid, Mother. They would never hurt him." He helped her to a narrow bed in the corner of the sick room. "Close your eyes," he said gently. "Rest. Maester Luwin tells me you've hardly slept since Bran's fall."
"I can't," she wept. "God's forgive me, Rob, I can't. What if he dies while I'm asleep? What if he dies? What if he dies?"
The walls were still howling. She screamed and held her ears again.
"Oh, God, close the window!"
"If you swear to me, you'll sleep." Rob went to the window, but as he reached for the shutters, another sound was added to the mournful howling of the dire wolves. "Dogs," he said, listening. "All the dogs are barking. They've never done that before." Catelyn heard his breath catch in his throat. When she looked up, his face was pale in the lamplight.
"Fire," he whispered. "Fire?" she thought, then, "Bran!"
"Help me," she said urgently, sitting up. "Help me with Bran." Rob did not seem to hear her. "The library tower's on fire," he said. Catelyn could see the flickering reddish light through the open window now.
She sagged with relief. Bran was safe. The library was across the bailey. There was no way the fire would reach them here. "Thank the gods," she whispered. Rob looked at her as if she'd gone mad. "Mother, stay here. I'll come back as soon as the fire's out." He ran out. She heard him shout to the guards outside the room. Heard them descending together in a wild rush, taking the stairs two and three at a time. Outside there were shouts of "Fire!" in the yard, screams, running footsteps, the whinny of frightened horses, and the frantic barking of the castle dogs. The howling was gone, she realized, as she listened to the cacophony. The dire wolves had fallen silent. Catelyn said a silent prayer of thanks to the seven faces of God as she went to the window. Across the bailey, long tongues of fire shot from the windows of the library. She watched the smoke rise into the sky and thought sadly of all the books the Starks had gathered over the centuries. Then she closed the shutters. When she turned away from the window, the man was in the room with her.
"You weren't supposed to be here," he muttered sourly. "No one was supposed to be here."
He was a small, dirty man in filthy brown clothing and a stank of horses. Catelyn knew all the men who worked in their stables, and he was none of them. He was gaunt, with limp blond hair and pale eyes, deep sunk in a bony face, and there was a dagger in his hand. Catelyn looked at the knife, then at Bran.
"No,"
she said, the word stuck in her throat, the merest whisper. He must have heard her.
"It's a mercy," he said. "He's dead already."
"No," Catelyn said, louder now she had found her voice again. "No, you can't." She spun back toward the window to scream for help, but the man moved faster than she would have believed. One hand clamped down over her mouth and yanked back her head. The other brought the dagger up to her windpipe. The stench of him was overwhelming. She reached up with both hands and grabbed the blade with all her strength, pulling it away from her throat. She heard him cursing into her ear. Her fingers were slippery with blood, but she would not let go of the dagger. The hand over her mouth clenched more tightly, shutting off her air. Catelyn twisted her head to the side and managed to get a piece of his flesh between her teeth. She bit down hard into his palm. The man grunted in pain. She ground her teeth together and tore at him, and all of a sudden he let go. The taste of his blood filled her mouth. She sucked in air and screamed, and he grabbed her hair and pulled her away from him, and she stumbled and went down, and then he was standing over her, breathing hard, shaking. The dagger was still clutched tightly in his right hand, slick with blood.
"You weren't supposed to be here," he repeated stupidly.
Catelyn saw the shadow slip through the open door behind him. There was a low rumble, less than a snarl, the merest whisper of a threat. But he must have heard something, because he started to turn, just as the wolf made its leap. They went down together, half sprawled over Catelyn where she'd fallen. The wolf had him under the jaw. The man's shriek lasted less than a second before the beast wrenched back its head, taking out half his throat. His blood felt like warm rain as it sprayed across her face. The wolf was looking at her. Its jaws were red and wet, and its eyes glowed golden in the dark room. It was Bran's wolf, she realized. Of course it was.
"Thank you,"
Catelyn whispered, her voice faint and tiny. She lifted her hand, trembling. The wolf padded closer, sniffed at her fingers, then licked at the blood with a wet, rough tongue. When it had cleaned all the blood off her hand, it turned away silently and jumped up on Bran's bed and lay down beside him. Catelyn began to laugh hysterically. That was the way they found them. When Rob and Maester Luan and Sir Roderick burst in with half the guards in Winterfell, when the laughter finally died in her throat, They wrapped her in warm blankets and led her back to the great keep, to her own chambers. Old Nan undressed her and helped her into a scalding hot bath and washed the blood off her with a soft cloth. Afterwards, Maester Lewin arrived to dress her wounds. The cuts in her fingers were deep, almost to the bone, and her scalp was raw and bleeding where he'd pulled out a handful of hair. The maester told her the pain was just starting now, and gave her milk of the poppy to help her sleep. Finally, she closed her eyes. When she opened them again, they told her she had slept 4 days. Catelyn nodded and sat up in bed. It all seemed like a nightmare to her now. Everything since Bran's fall, a terrible dream of blood and grief. But she had the pain in her hands to remind her that it was real. She felt weak and light-headed, yet strangely resolute, as if a great weight had lifted from her. "Bring me some bread and honey," she told her servants, "and take word to Maester Lewin that my bandages want changing." They looked at her in surprise and ran to do her bidding. Catelyn remembered the way she had been before, and she was ashamed. She had let them all down, her children, her husband, her house. It would not happen again. She would show these northerners how strong a Tully of River Run could be. Rob arrived before her food. Roderick Cassell came with him, and her husband's ward, Theon Greyjoy, and lastly, Hallis Mollen, a muscular guardsman with a square brown beard. He was the new captain of the guard, Rob said. Her son was dressed in boiled leather and ringmail, she saw, and a sword hung at his waist. "Who was he?" Catelyn asked him. "No one knows his name," Hallis Mollen told her. "He was no man of Winterfall, my lady, but some says they seen him here and about the castle these past few weeks." "One of the king's men, then," she said, "or one of the Lannisters. He could have waited behind when the others left." "Maybe," Hal said. "With all these strangers filling up Winterfell of late, there's no way of saying who he belongs to." "He'd been hiding in your stable," Greyjoy said. "You could smell it on him." "And how could he go unnoticed?" she said sharply. Hallis Mollen looked abashed. "Between the horses Lord Eddard took south, and then we sent north to the Night's Watch, the stalls were half empty. It were no great trick to hide from the stable boys. Could be Hodar saw him. The talk is the boy's been acting queer. But simple as he is—" Hal shook his head. "We found where he'd been sleeping," Rob put in. "He had 90 silver stags in a leather bag buried beneath the straw. It's good to know my son's life was not so cheaply," Catelyn said bitterly. Hallis Mollen looked at her confused. "Begging your grace, milady, you saying he was out to kill your boy?" Greyjoy was doubtful. "Oh, that's madness." "He came for Bran," Catelyn said. "He kept muttering how I wasn't supposed to be there. He set the library fire, thinking I would rush to put it out, taking any guards with me. If I hadn't been half mad with grief, it would have worked." "Why would anyone want to kill Bran?" Rob asked. "Gods, he's only a little boy, helpless, sleeping." Catelyn gave her firstborn a challenging look. "If you are to rule in the North, you must think these things through, Rob. Answer your own question. Why would anyone want to kill a sleeping child?" Before he could answer, the servants returned with a plate of food fresh from the kitchen. There was much more than she'd asked for. Hot bread, butter and honey, and blackberry preserves, a rasher of bacon and a soft-boiled egg, a wedge of cheese, a pot of mint tea. And with it came Maester Lewin. "How is my son, Maester?" Catelyn looked at all the food and found she had no appetite. Maester Lewin lowered his eyes.
"Unchanged, my lady."
It was the reply she had expected. No more, and no less. Her hands throbbed with pain, as if the blade were still in her, cutting deep. She sent the servants away and looked back to Rob. Do you have the answer yet? Someone is afraid Bran might wake up, Rob said. Afraid of what he might say or do. Afraid of something he knows. Catelyn was proud of him. Very good. She turned to the new captain of the guard. We must keep Bran safe. If there was one killer, there could be others. How many guards do you want, milady? He asked. So long as Lord Eddard is away, my son is the master of Winterfell, she told him. Rob stood a little taller. Put one man in the sick room, night and day, one outside the door, two at the bottom of the stairs. No one sees Bran without my warrant or my mother's. As you say, my lord. Do it now, Catelyn suggested. And let his wolf stay in the room with him, Rob added. Yes, Catelyn said, and then again, yes. Halas Mollan bowed and left the room. Lady Stark, Sir Roderick said when the guardsman had gone, did you chance to notice the dagger the killer used? The circumstances did not allow me to examine it closely, but I can vouch for its edge, Catelyn replied with a dry smile. Why do you ask? We found the knife still in the villain's grasp. It seems to me that it was altogether too fine a weapon for such a man. So I looked at it long and hard. The blade is Valyrian steel, the hilt dragonbone. A weapon like that has no business being in the hands of such as him. Someone gave it to him. Catelyn nodded, thoughtful. Rob, close the door. He looked at her strangely, but did as she told him. What I am about to tell you must not leave this room, she told him. I want your oaths on that. If ever a part of what I suspect is true, Ned and my girls have ridden into deadly danger, and a word in the wrong ears could mean their lives. Lord Eddard is a second father to me, said Theon Greyjoy. I do so swear. You have my oath, Maester Lewin said. And mine, milady, echoed Sir Roderick. She looked at her son. And you, Rob? He nodded his consent. My sister Lysa believes the Lannisters murdered her husband, Lord Aeron, the Hand of the King, Catelyn told him. It comes to me that Jaime Lannister did not join the hunt the day Bran fell. He remained here in the castle. The room was deathly quiet. I do not think Bran fell from that tower, she said into the stillness. I think he was thrown. The shock was plain on their faces. My lady, this is a monstrous suggestion, said Roderick Cassell. Even the Kingslayer would flinch at the murder of an innocent child. Oh, would he? Theon Greyjoy asked. I wonder. There is no limit to Lannister pride or Lannister ambition, Catelyn said.
The boy has always been sure-handed in the past, Maester Lewin said thoughtfully. He knew every stone in Winterfell.
Guards, Rob swore, his young face dark with anger. If this is true, he will pay for it. He drew his sword and waved it in the air. I'll kill him myself.
Sir Roderick bristled at him.
Put that away. The Lannisters are 100 leagues away. Never draw your sword unless you mean to use it. How many times must I tell you, foolish boy?
Abashed, Rob sheathed his sword, suddenly a child again. Catelyn said to Sir Roderick, I see my son is wearing steel now. The old master at arms said,
Well, I thought it was time.
Rob was looking at her anxiously. Past time, she said. Winterfell may have need of all its swords soon, and they had best not be made of wood. Theon Greyjoy put a hand on the hilt of his blade and said, My lady, if it comes to that, my house owes yours a great debt. Maester Lewin pulled at his chain collar where it chafed against his neck.
All we have is conjecture. This is the Queen's beloved brother we mean to accuse. She will not take it kindly. We must have proof, or forever keep silent.
"Your proof is in the dagger," Sir Roderick said. "A fine blade like that will not have gone unnoticed."
There was only one place to find the truth of it, Catelyn realized. Someone must go to the King's Landing.
"I'll go," Rob said.
"No," she told him, "your place is here. There must always be a Stark in Winterfell." She looked at Sir Roderick, with his great white whiskers, at Maester Lewin, in his grey robes, at young Greyjoy, lean and dark and impetuous. Who to send? Who would be believed? Then she knew. Catelyn struggled to push back the blankets, her bandaged fingers as stiff and unyielding as stone. She climbed out of bed. "I must go myself."
"My lady," said Maester Lewin, "is that wise? Surely the Lannisters would greet your arrival with suspicion."
"What about Bran?" Rob asked. The poor boy looked utterly confused now.
"You can't mean to leave him?"
"I've done everything I can for Bran," she said, laying a wounded hand on his arm. "His life is in the hands of the guards and Maester Lewin. As you reminded me yourself, Rob, I have other children to think of now."
"You will need a strong escort, my lady," Theon said.
"I'll send Hal with a squad of guardsmen," Rob said.
"No," Catelyn said. "A large party attracts unwelcome attention. I would not have the Lannisters know I'm coming."
Sir Roderick protested.
"My lady, let me accompany you at least. The King's Road can be perilous for a woman alone."
"I will not be taking the King's Road," Catelyn replied. She thought for a moment, then nodded her consent. "Two riders can move as fast as one, and a good deal faster than a long column burdened by wagons and wheelhouses. I will welcome your company, Sir Roderick. We will follow the White Knife down to the sea, hire a ship at White Harbour. Strong horses and brisk winds should bring us to King's Landing, well ahead of Ned and the Lannisters."
"And then," she thought, "we shall see what we shall see."
Sansa. Eddard Stark had left before dawn, Septa Mordane informed Sansa, as they broke their fast.
"The king sent for him. Another hunt, I do believe. There's still wild aurochs in these lands, I'm told."
"I've never seen an aurochs," Sansa said, feeding a piece of bacon to Lady under the table. The direwolf took it from her hand, as delicate as a queen. Septa Mordane sniffed in disapproval.
"A noble lady does not feed dogs at her table," she said, breaking off another piece of comb and letting the honey drip down onto her bread.
"She's not a dog, she's a direwolf," Sansa pointed out, as Lady licked her fingers with a rough tongue. "Anyway, Father said we could keep them with us if we want." The scepter was not appeased.
"You're a good girl, Sansa, but I do vow when it comes to that creature, you're as willful as your sister Arya."
She scowled.
"And where is Arya this morning?"
"She wasn't hungry," Sansa said, knowing full well that her sister had probably stolen down to the kitchen hours ago and wheedled a breakfast out of some cook's boy.
"Do remind her to dress nicely today. The grey velvet, perhaps. We are all invited to ride with the Queen and Princess Myrcella in the royal wheelhouse, and we must look our best."
Sansa already looked her best. She had brushed out her long auburn hair until it shone, and picked the nicest blue silks. She had been looking forward to today for more than a week. It was a great honour to ride with the Queen, and besides, Prince Joffrey might be there, her betrothed. Just thinking it made her feel a strange fluttering inside, even though they were not to marry for years and years. Sansa did not really know Geoffrey yet, but she was already in love with him. He was all she ever dreamed her prince should be, tall and handsome and strong, with hair like gold. She treasured every chance to spend time with him, few as they were. The only thing that scared her about today was Arya. Arya had a way of ruining everything. You never knew what she would do. "I'll tell her," Sansa said uncertainly, "but she'll dress the way she always does."
She hoped it wouldn't be too embarrassing. "May I be excused?"
"You may."
Septa Mordain helped herself to more bread and honey, and Sansa slid from the bench. Lady followed at her heels as she ran from the inn's common room. Outside, she stood for a moment amidst the shouts and curses and the creak of wooden wheels as the men broke down the tents and pavilions and loaded the wagons for another day's march. The inn was a sprawling three-story structure of pale stone, the biggest that Sansa had ever seen. But even so, it had accommodations for less than a third of the king's party, which had swollen to more than 400 with the addition of her father's household and the free riders who had joined them on the road. She found Arya on the banks of the Trident, trying to hold Nymeria still while she brushed dry mud from her fur. The dire wolf was not enjoying the process. Arya was wearing the same riding leathers she had worn yesterday and the day before. "You'd better put on something pretty," Sansa told her. "Septa Mordain said so. We're travelling in the Queen's wheelhouse with Princess Myrcella today." "I'm not," Arya said, trying to brush a tangle out of Nymeria's matted grey fur. "Micah and I are going to ride upstream and look for rubies at the ford."
"Rubies?" Sansa said. "Lust? What rubies?"
Arya gave her a look, like she was so stupid.
"Rhaegar's rubies! This is where King Robert killed him and won the crown."
Sansa regarded her scrawny little sister in disbelief.
"You can't look for rubies. The princess is expecting us. The queen invited us both."
"I don't care," Arya said. "The wheelhouse doesn't even have windows. You can't see a thing."
"Well, what could you want to see?" Sansa said, annoyed.
She had been thrilled by the invitation, and her stupid sister was going to ruin everything, just as she feared.
It's all just fields and farms and holdfasts."
"It is not," Arya said stubbornly. "If you came with us sometimes, you'd see." "I hate riding," Sansa said fervently. "All it does is get you soiled and dusty and sore." Arya shrugged.
"Hold still," she snapped at Nymeria. "I'm not hurting you."
Then to Sansa she said, "When we were crossing the Neck, I counted 36 flowers I never saw before, and Micah showed me a lizard line." Sansa shuddered. They had been 12 days crossing the Neck, rumbling down a crooked causeway through an endless black bog, and she had hated every moment of it. The air had been damp and clammy, the causeway so narrow they could not even make proper camp at night. They had to stop right on the King's Road. Dense thickets of half-drowned trees pressed close around them, branches dripping with curtains of pale fungus. Huge flowers bloomed in the mud and floated on pools of stagnant water. But if you were stupid enough to leave the causeway to pluck them, there were quicksands waiting to suck you down, and snakes watching from the trees, and lizard lions floating half-submerged in the water, like black logs with eyes and teeth. None of which stopped Arya, of course. One day she came back grinning her horsey grin, her hair all tangled and her clothes covered in mud, clutching a raggedy bunch of purple and green flowers for father. Sansa kept hoping he would tell Arya to behave herself and act like the high-born lady she was supposed to be, but he never did. He only hugged her and thanked her for the flowers. That just made her worse. Then it turned out the purple flowers were called poison kisses, and Arya got a rash on her arms. Sansa would have thought that might have taught her a lesson, but Arya laughed about it, and the next day she rubbed mud all over her arms just like some ignorant bug woman just because her friend, Micah, told her it would stop the itching. She had bruises on her arms and shoulders too, dark purple welts and faded green and yellow splotches. Sansa had seen them when her sister undressed for sleep. How she had gotten those, only the Seven Guards knew. Arya was still going on, brushing out Nymeria's tangles and chattering about things she'd seen on the trek south. "Last week we found this haunted watchtower, and the day before we chased a herd of wild horses. You should have seen them run when they caught a scent of Nymeria." The wolf wriggled in her grasp, and Arya scolded her. "Stop that! I have to do the other side. You're all muddy."
"You're not supposed to leave the column," Sansa reminded her. "Father said so."
Arya shrugged.
"I didn't go far. Anyway, Nymeria was with me the whole time. I don't always go off, either. Sometimes it's fun just to ride along with the wagons and talk to people."
Sansa knew all about the sorts of people Arya liked to talk to. Squires and grooms and serving girls, old men and naked children, rough-spoken free riders on certain berth. Arya would make friends with anybody. This Micah was the worst, a butcher's boy, 13 and wild. He slept in the meat wagon and smelled of the slaughtering block. Just the sight of him was enough to make Sansa feel sick. But Arya seemed to prefer his company to hers. Sansa was running out of patience now. "You have to come with me," she told her sister firmly. "You can't refuse the Queen. Septa Mordain will expect you." Arya ignored her. She gave a hard yank with a brush. Nymeria growled and spun away, affronted. "Come back here!" "There's going to be lemon cakes and tea," Sansa went on, "or adult and reasonable." Lady brushed past her leg. Sansa scratched her ears the way she liked, and Lady sat beside her on her haunches, watching Arya chase Nymeria. "Why would you want to ride a smelly old horse and get all sore and sweaty when you could recline on feather pillows and eat cakes with the Queen?" "I don't like the Queen," Arya said casually. Sansa sucked in her breath, shocked that even Arya would say such a thing. But her sister prattled on heedless. "She won't even let me bring Nymeria." She thrust the brush under her belt and stalked her wolf. Nymeria watched her approach wearily. "A royal wheelhouse is no place for a wolf," Sansa said. "And Princess Marcella is afraid of them, you know that." "Marcella's a little baby." Anya grabbed Nymeria around the neck, but the moment she pulled out the brush again, the direwolf wriggled free and bounded off. Frustrated, Arya threw down the brush. "Bad wolf," she shouted. Sansa couldn't help but smile a little. The kennel master once told her that an animal takes after its master. She gave Lady a quick little hug. Lady licked her cheek. Sansa giggled. Arya heard and whirled round, glaring. "I don't care what you say, I'm going out riding." Her long horsey face got that stubborn look that meant she was going to do something willful. "Gods be true, Arya, sometimes you act like a child," Sansa said. "I'll go by myself, then. It will be ever so much nicer that way. Lady and I will eat all the lemon cakes and just have the best time without you." She turned to walk off, but Arya shouted after her, "They won't let you bring Lady, either." She was gone before Sansa could think of a reply, chasing Nymeria along the river. Alone and humiliated, Sansa took the long way back to the inn, where she knew Septa Mordain would be waiting. Lady padded quietly by her side. She was almost in tears. All she wanted was for things to be nice and pretty, the way they were in the songs. Why couldn't Arya be sweet and delicate and kind, like Princess Marcella? She would have liked a sister like that. Sansa could never understand how two sisters, born only 2 years apart, could be so different. It would have been easier if Arya had been a bastard, like their half-brother, Jon. She even looked like Jon, with the long face and brown hair of the Starks, and nothing of their lady mother in her face or her colouring. And Jon's mother had been common, or so people whispered. Once, when she was littler, Sansa had even asked Mother if perhaps there hadn't been some mistake. Perhaps the Grumpkins had stolen her real sister. But Mother had only laughed and said no. Arya was her daughter and Sansa's true-born sister, blood of their blood. Sansa could not think why Mother would want to lie about it, so she supposed it had to be true. As she neared the center of camp, her distress was quickly forgotten. A crowd had gathered around the Queen's wheelhouse. Sansa heard excited voices buzzing like a hive of bees. The doors had been thrown open, she saw, and the Queen stood at the top of the wooden steps, smiling down at someone. She heard her saying, "The council does us great honor, my good lords." "What's happening?" she asked a squire she knew.
The council sent riders from King's Landing to escort us the rest of the way, he told her. An honour guard for the king.
Anxious to see, Sansa let Lady clear a path through the crowd. People moved aside hastily for the direwolf. When she got closer, she saw two knights kneeling before the queen in armour so fine and gorgeous that it made her blink. One knight wore an intricate suit of white enamel scales, brilliant as a field of new-fallen snow, with silver chasings and clasps that glittered in the sun. When he removed his helm, Sansa saw that he was an old man with hair as pale as his armour, yet he seemed strong and graceful for all that. From his shoulders hung the pure white cloak of the king's guard. His companion was a man near 20, whose armour was steel plate of a deep forest green. He was the handsomest man Sansa had ever set eyes upon, tall and powerfully made, with jet-black hair that fell to his shoulders and framed a clean-shaven face, and laughing green eyes to match his armour. Cradled under one arm was an antlered helm, its magnificent rack shimmering in gold. At first, Sansa did not notice the third stranger. He did not kneel with the others. He stood to one side, beside their horses, a gaunt, grim man, who watched the proceedings in silence. His face was pockmarked and beardless, with deep-set eyes and hollow cheeks. Though he was not an old man, only a few wisps of hair remained to him, sprouting above his ears, but those he had grown long as a woman's. His armour was iron-grey chainmail over layers of boiled leather, plain and unadorned, and it spoke of age and hard use. Above his right shoulder, the stained leather hilt of the blade strapped to his back was visible, a two-handed greatsword, too long to be worn at his side. "The king has gone hunting, but I know he will be pleased to see you when he returns," the queen was saying to the two knights who knelt before her. But Sansa could not take her eyes off the third man. He seemed to feel the weight of her gaze. Slowly, he turned his head. Lady growled, a terror as overwhelming as anything Sansa Stark had ever felt filled her suddenly. She stepped backward and bumped into someone. Strong hands grasped her by the shoulders, and for a moment Sansa thought it was her father. But when she turned, it was the burned face of Sandor Clegane looking down at her, his mouth twisted in a terrible mockery of a smile. "You're shaking, girl," he said, his voice rasping. "Do I frighten you so much?" He did, and had, since she first laid eyes on the ruin that fire had made of his face, though it seemed to her now that he was not half so terrifying as the other. Still, Sansa wrenched away from him, and the hound laughed, and Lady moved between them, rumbling a warning. Sansa dropped to her knees to wrap her arms around the wolf. They were all gathered around, gaping. She could feel their eyes on her, and here and there she heard muttered comments and titters of laughter. "A wolf," a man said, and someone else said, "Seven elves, that's a direwolf." And the first man said, "What's it doing in camp?" And the hound's rasping voice replied, "The Starks use them for wet nurses." And Sansa realized that the two stranger knights were looking down on her and Lady, swords in their hands, and then she was frightened again, and ashamed. Tears filled her eyes. She heard the queen say, "Joffrey, go to her," and her prince was there. "Leave her alone," Joffrey said. He stood over her, beautiful in blue wool and black leather, his golden curls shining in the sun like a crown. He gave her his hand, drew her to her feet. "What is it, sweet lady? Why are you afraid? No one will hurt you. Put away your swords, all of you. The wolf is her little pet, that's all." He looked at Sandor Clegane. "And you, dog, away with you. You're scaring my betrothed." The hound, ever faithful, bowed and slid away quietly through the press. Sansa struggled to steady herself. She felt like such a fool. She was a Stark of Winterfell,
a noble lady, and some day she would be a queen.
It was not him, my sweet prince, she tried to explain. It was the other one.
The two stranger knights exchanged a look. Pain? Chuckled the young man in the green armour. The old man in white spoke to Sansa gently.
Oft-times Sir Ilion frightens me as well, sweet lady. He has a fearsome aspect.
As well he should. The queen had descended from the wheelhouse. The spectators parted to make way for her. If the wicked do not fear the king's justice, you have put the wrong man in the office. Sansa finally found her words.
Then surely you have chosen the right one, your grace, she said,
and a gale of laughter erupted all around her.
"Well spoken, child," said the old man in white, "as befits the daughter of Eddard Stark. I am honoured to know you. However irregular the manner of our meeting, I am Sir Barristan Selmy of the King's Guard." He bowed.
Sansa knew the name, and now the courtesies that Septa Mordain had taught her over the years came back to her. "The Lord Commander of the King's Guard," she said, "and counsellor to Robert, our king, and to heirs Targaryen before him." "The honour is mine, good knight. Even in the far north, the singers praise the deeds of Barristan the Bold." The green knight laughed again. "Barristan the Old, you mean? Don't flatter him too sweetly, child. He thinks over much of himself already." He smiled at her. "Now, wolf girl, if you can put a name to me as well, then I must concede that you are truly a hand's daughter." Joffrey stiffened beside her. "Have a care how you address my betrothed." "I can answer," Sansa said quickly, to quell her prince's anger. She smiled at the green knight. "Your helmet bears golden antlers, my lord. The stag is the sigil of the royal house. King Robert has two brothers. By your extreme youth you can only be Renly Baratheon, Lord of Storm's End and counsellor to the king, and so I name you." Sir Barristan chuckled. "By his extreme youth, he can only be a prancing jackanapes, and so I name him." There was general laughter led by Lord Renly himself. The tension of a few moments ago was gone, and Sansa was beginning to feel comfortable, until Sir Ilion Payne shouldered two men aside and stood before her, unsmiling. He did not say a word. Lady bared her teeth and began to growl, a low rumble full of menace. But this time Sansa silenced the wolf with a gentle hand to the head. "I'm sorry if I offended you, Sir Ilion," she said. She waited for an answer, but none came. As the headsman looked at her, his pale, colourless eyes seemed to strip the clothes away from her, and then the skin, leaving her soul naked before him. Still silent, he turned and walked away. Sansa did not understand. She looked at her prince. "Did I say something wrong, your grace? Why will he not speak to me?" "Sir Ilion has not been feeling talkative these past 14 years, Lord Renly commented with a sly smile. Joffrey gave his uncle a look of pure loathing, then took Sansa's hand in his own. "Heirs Targaryen had his tongue ripped out with hot pincers." "He speaks most eloquently with his sword, however," the queen said, "and his devotion to our realm is unquestioned." Then she smiled graciously and said, "Sansa, the good counsellors and I must speak together until the king returns with your father. I fear we shall have to postpone your day with Marcella. Please give your sweet sister my apologies. Joffrey, perhaps you would be so kind as to entertain our guests today." "It would be my pleasure, mother," Geoffrey said very formally. He took her by the arm and led her away from the wheelhouse, and Sansa's spirits took flight. A whole day with her prince. She gazed at Joffrey worshipfully. He was so gallant, she thought. The way he had rescued her from Sir Ilion and the Hound, why, it was almost like the songs, like the time Selwyn of the Mirror Shield saved the Princess Dorissa from the giants, or Prince Aemon the Dragonite, championing Queen Nereid's honour against evil Sir Morgul's slanders. The touch of Joffrey's hand on her sleeve made her heart beat faster. "What would you like to do?" "Be with you," Sansa thought, but she said, "Whatever you'd like to do, my prince." Joffrey reflected for a moment. "We could go riding,"
"Oh, I love riding," Sansa said. Joffrey glanced back at Lady, who was following at their heels. "Your wolf is liable to frighten the horses, and my dog seems to frighten you. Let us leave them both behind and set off on our own. What do you say?" Sansa hesitated. "If you like," she said uncertainly, "I suppose I could tie Lady up." She did not quite understand, though. "I didn't know you had a dog." Joffrey laughed. "He's my mother's dog, in truth. She has set him to guard me, and so he does." "Oh, you mean the hound," she says. She wanted to hit herself for being so slow. Her prince would never love her if she seemed stupid. "Is it safe to leave him behind?" Prince Joffrey looked annoyed that she would even ask. "Have no fear, lady. I am almost a man grown, and I don't fight with wood like your brothers. All I need is this." He drew his sword and showed it to her. A long sword, adroitly shrunken to suit a boy of 12, gleaming blue steel, castle-forged and double-edged, with a leather grip and a lion's head pommel in gold. Sansa exclaimed over it admiringly, and Joffrey looked pleased. "I call it Lion's Tooth," he said. And so they left her direwolf and his bodyguard behind them, while they ranged east along the north bank of the Trident, with no company save Lion's Tooth. It was a glorious day, a magical day. The air was warm and heavy with the scent of flowers, and the woods here had a gentle beauty that Sansa had never seen in the north. Prince Joffrey's mount was a blood-bay courser, swift as the wind, and he rode it with reckless abandon, so fast that Sansa was hard-pressed to keep up on her mare. It was a day for adventures. They explored the caves by the riverbank and tracked a shadow cat to its lair, and when they grew hungry, Joffrey found a holdfast by its smoke and told them to fetch food and wine for their prince and his lady. They dined on trout fresh from the river, and Sansa drank more wine than she had ever drunk before. "My father only lets us have one cup, and only at feasts," she confessed to her prince. "My betrothed can drink as much as she wants," Joffrey said, refilling her cup. They went more slowly after they had eaten. Joffrey sang for her as they rode, his voice high and sweet and pure. Sansa was a little dizzy from the wine. "Shouldn't we be starting back?" she asked. "Soon," Joffrey said. "The battleground is right up ahead, where the river bends. That was where my father killed Rhaegar Targaryen, you know. He smashed in his chest, crunch, right through the armor." Joffrey swung an imaginary warhammer to show her how it was done. "Then my uncle Jaime killed old Aerys, and my father was king." "What's that sound?" Sansa heard it too, floating through the woods, a kind of wooden clattering. Snack, snack, snack. "I don't know," she said. It made her nervous, though. "Joffrey, let's go back." "I want to see what it is." Joffrey turned his horse in the direction of the sounds, and Sansa had no choice but to follow. The noises grew louder and more distinct, the clack of wood on wood, and as they grew closer, they heard heavy breathing as well, and now and then a grunt. "Someone's there," Sansa said anxiously. She found herself thinking of Lady, wishing the dire wolf was with her. "You're safe with me." Joffrey drew his lion's tooth from its sheath. The sound of steel on leather made her tremble. "This way," he said, riding through a stand of trees. Beyond, in a clearing overlooking the river, they came upon a boy and a girl playing at knights. Their swords were wooden sticks, broom handles from the look of them, and they were rushing across the grass, swinging at each other lustily. The boy was years older, a head taller and much stronger, and he was pressing the attack. The girl, a scrawny thing in soiled leathers, was dodging and managing to get her stick in the way of most of the boy's blows, but not all. When she tried to lunge at him, he caught her stick with his own, swept it aside, and slid his wood down hard on her fingers. She cried out and lost her weapon. Prince Joffrey laughed. The boy looked around, wide-eyed and startled, and dropped his stick in the grass. The girl glared at them,
sucking on her knuckles to take the sting out, and Sansa was horrified.
"Arya!" she called out incredulously.
"Go away!" Arya shouted back at them, angry tears in her eyes. "What are you doing here? Leave us alone!"
Joffrey glanced from Arya to Sansa and back again.
"Your sister?"
she nodded, blushing.
Joffrey examined the boy, an ungainly lad with a coarse, freckled face and thick red hair.
"And who are you, boy?" he asked in a commanding tone that took no notice of the fact that the other was a year his senior.
"Micah," the boy muttered.
He recognized the prince and averted his eyes.
"My lord?"
"He's the butcher's boy," Sansa said.
"He's my friend," Arya said sharply. "You leave him alone."
"Oh, a butcher's boy who wants to be a knight, is it?"
Joffrey swung down from his mount, sword in hand.
"Pick up your sword, butcher's boy," he said, his eyes bright with amusement. "Let's see how good you are."
Micah stood there, frozen with fear.
Joffrey walked towards him. "Go on, pick it up. Or do you only fight little girls?"
She asked me to, my lord," Micah said. "She asked me to."
Sansa had only to glance at Arya and see the flush on her sister's face to know that the boy was telling the truth. But Joffrey was in no mood to listen. The wine had made him wild.
"Are you going to pick up your sword?"
Micah shook his head.
"It's only a stick, my lord. It's no sword. It's only a stick."
"And you're only a butcher's boy and no knight."
Joffrey lifted Lion's Tooth and laid its point on Micah's cheek below the eye as the butcher's boy stood trembling.
"That was my lady's sister you were hitting. Do you know that?"
A bright bud of blood blossomed where his sword pressed into Micah's flesh, and a slow red line trickled down the boy's cheek.
"Stop it!" Arya screamed. She grabbed up her fallen stick.
Sansa was afraid. "Arya, you stay out of this."
"I won't hurt him."
"Much," Prince Joffrey told Arya, never taking his eyes off the butcher's boy. Arya went for him. Sansa slid off her mare, but she was too slow. Arya swung with both hands. There was a loud crack as the wood split against the back of the prince's head, and then everything happened at once before Sansa's horrified eyes. Joffrey staggered and whirled around, roaring curses. Micah ran for the trees as fast as his legs would take him. Arya swung at the prince again, but this time Joffrey caught the blow on Lion's Tooth and sent her broken stick flying from her hands. The back of his head was all bloody, and his eyes were on fire. Sansa was shrieking,
"No, no, stop it! Stop it, both of you! You're spoiling it!"
But no one was listening. Arya scooped up a rock and hurled it at Joffrey's head. She hit his horse instead, and the blood bay reared and went galloping off after Micah.
"Stop it! Don't stop it!"
Sansa screamed. Joffrey slashed at Arya with his sword, screaming obscenities. Terrible words, filthy words. Arya darted back, frightened now, but Joffrey followed, hurling her towards the woods, backing her up against a tree. Sansa didn't know what to do. She watched helplessly, almost blind from her tears. Then a grey blur flashed past her, and suddenly Nymeria was there, leaping jaws closing around Joffrey's sword arm. The steel fell from his fingers as the wolf knocked him off his feet, and they rolled in the grass, the wolf snarling and ripping at him, the prince shrieking in pain.
"Get it off!" he screamed. "Get it off!"
Arya's voice cracked like a whip. "Nymeria!" The dire wolf let go of Joffrey and moved to Arya's side. The prince lay on the grass, whimpering, cradling his mangled arm, his shirt soaked in blood. Arya said,
"She didn't hurt you."
"Much." She picked up Lion's Tooth where it had fallen and stood over him, holding the sword with both hands. Joffrey made a scared, whimpery sound as he looked up at her.
"No," he said, "don't hurt me. I'll tell my mother."
"You leave him alone," Sansa screamed at her sister.
Arya whirled and heaved the sword into the air, putting her whole body into the throw. The blue steel flashed in the sun as the sword spun out over the river. It hit the water and vanished with a splash. Joffrey moaned. Arya ran off to her horse, Nymeria loping at her heels. After they had gone, Sansa went to Prince Joffrey. His eyes were closed in pain, his breath ragged. Sansa knelt beside him.
"Joffrey," she sobbed. "Oh, look what they did. Oh, look what they did, my poor prince. Don't be afraid. I'll ride to the Holdfast and bring help for you."
Tenderly she reached out and brushed back his soft blonde hair. His eyes snapped open and looked at her, and there was nothing but loathing there, nothing but the vilest contempt. "Then go," he spit at her, "and don't touch me." Eddard. "They found her, my lord." Ned rose quickly. "Our men or Lannisters?" "It was Jory," his steward, Vaen Poole, replied. "She's not been harmed." "Thank the gods," Ned said. His men had been searching for Arya for 4 days now, but the Queen's men had been out hunting as well. "Where is she? Tell Jory to bring her here at once." "I'm sorry, my lord," Poole told him. "The guards on the gate were Lannister men, and they informed the Queen when Jory brought her in. She's been taken directly before the king." "Damn that woman," Ned said, striding to the door. "Find Sansa and bring her to the audience chamber. Her voice may be needed." He descended the tower steps in a red rage. He had led searches himself for the first 3 days, and had scarcely slept an hour since Arya had disappeared. This morning he had been so heartsick and weary he could scarcely stand. But now his fury was on him, filling him with strength. Men called out to him as he crossed the castle yard, but Ned ignored them in his haste. He would have run, but he was still the king's hand, and a hand must keep his dignity. He was aware of the eyes that followed him, and the muttered voices wondering what he would do. The castle was a modest holding, a half-day's ride south of the Trident. The royal party had made themselves the uninvited guests of its lord, Sir Raymond Darry, while the hunt for Arya and the butcher's boy was conducted on both sides of the river. They were not welcome visitors. Sir Raymond lived under the king's peace, but his family had fought beneath Rhaegar's dragon banners at the Trident, and his 3 older brothers had died there, a truth neither Robert nor Sir Raymond had forgotten. With king's men, Darry men, Lannister men, and Stark men all crammed into a castle far too small for them, tensions burned hot and heavy. The king had appropriated Sir Raymond's audience chamber, and that was where Ned found them. The room was crowded when he burst in. Too crowded, he thought. Left alone, he and Robert might have been able to settle the matter amicably. Robert was slumped in Darry's high seat at the far end of the room, his face closed and sullen. Cersei Lannister and her son stood beside him. The queen had her hand on Joffrey's shoulder. Thick, silken bandages still covered the boy's arm. Arya stood in the center of the room, alone but for Jory Cassel. Every eye upon her. "Arya!" Ned called out loudly. He went to her, his boots ringing on the stone floor. When she saw him, she cried out and began to sob. Ned went to one knee and took her in his arms. She was shaking.
"I'm sorry," she sobbed. "I'm sorry. I'm sorry."
"I know," he said. She felt so tiny in his arms, nothing but a scrawny little girl. It was hard to see how she had caused so much trouble. "Are you hurt?"
"No."
Her face was dirty, and her tears left pink tracks down her cheeks.
"Hungry some. I ate some berries, but there was nothing else."
"We'll feed you soon enough," Ned promised. He rose to face the king. "What is the meaning of this?" His eyes swept the room, searching for friendly faces. But for his own men, they were few enough. Sir Raymond Darry guarded his look well. Lord Renly wore a half-smile that might mean anything, and Earl Sir Barristan was grave. The rest were Lannister men, and hostile. Their only good fortune was that both Jaime Lannister and Sandor Clegane were missing, leading searches north of the Trident. "Why was I not told that my daughter had been found?" Ned demanded, his voice ringing. "Why was she not brought to me at once?" He spoke to Robert, but it was Cersei Lannister who answered. "How dare you speak to your king in that manner?" At that, the king stood. "Quiet, woman," he snapped. He straightened in his seat. "I'm sorry, Ned. I never meant to fright